Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This segment with Jim Miller is brought to you by Ford. Tune in every Monday to Built Ford Tough Bears Monday, brought to you by your local Ford stores. Jim Miller joins us on the Grossinger Auto Group Hotline. Jim, I don't even really know where to begin with yesterday. How was your post-game interactions yesterday? I wasn't able to watch.
Yeah, well, I think they're, you know, everybody was pretty frustrated because I think, again, it was a very winnable game, you know, for the Chicago Bears, you know, to come out and have all the pre-snap penalties and things like that. And then, of course, the unfortunate incident with the challenge that didn't go in the Bears' favor. But I think all in all, you know, just more frustration. I think, you know, again, they don't make the plays necessary that you have to make to put yourself in a position to win. And then, you know, defensively, I'd say the same thing. I thought it was one of their worst games tackling from early in the game all the way to the end. And, you know, unfortunately there they got dominated at the line of scrimmage because here twice now the Packers outrushed them in both the games they played this year.
Did you buy that this was a must win for John Fox? It was written about in a lot of ways last week, and those were well sourced articles. Like, that feeling seemed to really be coming from inside the Hallis Hall that, like, oh yeah, now you're favored against Green Bay with no Aaron Rodgers, that this was a must win.
Well, I think that's a very winnable game. I don't know if it was a must win, but I think the Bears had everything in their favor to you know, you're playing at home, you're without Aaron Rodgers, they're ailing on defense. When you look at the Packers and hear the Bears, you know, come out and they did not play their best football. They didn't play as well as what they have. I think they've shown improvement as a football team, and we'll see where it ends up because they need to continue to show improvement.
So how do you divvy up the blame for the result of yesterday?
I put a lot on the players. Pre-snap penalties, that to me, those are all on the players when you do those things. Missed tackles. That's on the players. You know, obviously the challenge, you can put that on the coaches. That, you know, that should have gone in a different way, in my opinion. And, you know, a lot of it is just lack of execution on a lot of things. I think the ability to make plays were there for the players. I really believe that. I thought they got whooped up front, though, on their offensive line.
How about the overall sloppiness and disorganization? It reeks of being poorly coached to me, Jim. 11 different players get penalties. Is that all on the players? Is there a time when that can be looked at as on the coach?
Well, I don't know how they practice. I'm not in that building. You know, but if it's tolerated during the week, it's going to happen on Sundays. You know, that's normally, you practice how you play. Is normally how it is.
But does any coach, you know what I mean? Have you ever been on a team where the coach tolerated it during the week?
No, I don't think John Fox tolerates it. I don't think any coach in that building would tolerate. I mean, you guys are out to training camp. They've actually got officials out there at training camp disciplining the players, just like how it's going to be in the game. That's just, to me, lack of concentration by a player of what their job and what they're being asked to do. You know, they got to know the snap count. They got to know how to line up. They got to know how to do these things. It's professional football. It's what you're paid to do. And normally, you know, if you have a veteran quarterback, normally you say, hey, if you're in a legal formation, hey, man, you got to get a back up. You're a yard, you know, you got to back up a yard, get off the line of scrimmage so we don't get a legal penalty. Quarterback shouldn't have to do it. But if you're on top of your game, you make sure the play goes off without a hitch. If you have the ability to correct something, correct it. And, you know, it's all part of it, I really believe.
What about the fact that they were doing all of this coming out of a bye? Does that make it more of an indictment on the coaches?
Yeah, I expected them to be mentally sharper. You know, the players should have been energized. They should have been refreshed. They sounded that way leading up to the game. And then they come out and play the way they did. You know, to me, they didn't play with the intensity and sharpness that they needed to as a football team. You know, and part of that is on the players. But, again, it's professional football. I don't think a head coach has to give a Newt Rockne speech before a game. You know, you got to get your mind right and go out and play football. It doesn't matter what day of the week it is, Monday, mm-hmm. Thursday, Sunday. That's what you're paid to do.
All right, so what are we looking at here, Jim? Where would you say this roster, how does this roster compare to other rosters around the NFL? Because if it's not the coaches, and it is the players overall being focused, you know, having a lack of focus, is there also a serious lack of talent? We're trying to figure out why they're so bad.
No, I think they're better built on both sides of the ball. They're front seven defensively. And I believe their offensive line has had a lot of depth. They did not play well yesterday, but I do think that they've showed that they've had depth this year. With you look at, you know, look at how they pounded the Baltimore Ravens or the Steelers, which are a pretty good defense. So again, I think the depth issues are there. In terms of playmakers, they're not there. You know, I think we know. To me, yesterday, the silver lining of the game, the passing game woke up a little bit. You know, you got close to 300 yards, and there could have been a lot more in the passing game. And look what one player does to that. Is Dontrell Inman a world beater? No, but he's a better football player as a receiver than anybody they had on the roster. That showed yesterday. Bellamy, his speed, yeah, I know he struggles to catch the football, but yeah, they put him out there, and he gets a big explosive play. But you look at the other ones, he dropped three others. So it's the skill position, the playmakers are still not there. They're better with Cohen and the players that they have. But, I mean, come on. Would you put the Bears' number one receiver up against any other team?
Oh, no. No. There's all sorts of issues. I think we both sort of look at the coaches in a different way than you. I'm very disappointed with Dowell Loggins' predictability yesterday. Where do you stand on that?
They want to be who they want to be, which is run the football, right? And then they're not running the football very well, and they kind of transition during the game where they crank it up and open it up and hit a couple big plays in the passing game. But if what's disappointing is that's who they want to be, is a pound-it football team, but yet they got more negative runs than any team in the National Football League, which set them back yesterday as well, and they couldn't dominate the defensive line of the Packers. The Bears could not run the football effectively, and that's who they want to be. And they don't have the playmakers if they need to switch to say, all right, hey, you're stopping the run, let's go. Let's start attacking this suspect secondary. And they struggle to do that because they don't have the playmakers on the outside. So the whole package is not there to present. That's just my opinion. You know, but what's disappointing is they want to be able to pound people, and they couldn't do it yesterday. You know, they could not do it against the Packers.
We're talking to Jim Miller on the Spiegel and Parkin show. You know, I wanted to play in the NBA, but I had no talent and back problems and was short and all sorts of things. So you got to adjust. I'm like, oh, I can talk about it a little bit. Maybe I'll try that. Like, the Packers run defense is pretty good. The Packers pass defense is awful. Their run success wasn't there. So much of the NFL is week-to-week game planning. Like, I hear you. Like, you want to beat them with your strength, but this isn't the Patriots. This isn't the Saints. This isn't the Eagles that we're talking about here. Like, why not just exploit their weakness as opposed to trying to highlight a strength of yours that you don't really have? And, oh, by the way, they've got injuries on the offensive line with Kyle Long and guys playing out of position, so it's not even like their strength was really available to them.
Well, yeah, but again, I still think you want to do what you want to do because, again, I don't think the game plan with the rookie quarterback is to say, all right, you know, let's be like the Saints and go out there. I don't care if we throw 25 passes in a row. All right, that's what Sean Payton will legitimately do with Drew Brees when he knows it's your weakness. All right, Mitchell's not there yet. You can't do that. So, and especially when you don't have playmakers on the outside and you just acquired one, 14 days ago? Via a trade. I mean, that's what I mean by at some point you got to be realistic, okay, and say we can't do that. We can't just line up empty and say go attack, attack, attack. They try to do it sometimes. Like I was listening to you guys earlier today, somebody said something about, well, why don't they implement some spread offense? The Bears did that. If you go back and look at that game, there are spread elements in that offense where Mitchell Trubisky's handing the ball off to Jordan Howard. And he's running around the end to hesitate the defensive end. Mm-hmm. Now, can they do more pass plays and stuff off that? They have done that. Okay, but like there was a play yesterday, he tried to get Tariq Cohen. It's just a Hank route. I think he ran the wrong route, I believe, because the route distribution wasn't there. He was supposed to hook up over the ball. Shaheen's running a curl route on the outside, and Mitchell ends up throwing to Cohen, who in my position, he wouldn't even have gone to him. He would have went to Shaheen if Cohen gets the right route distribution.
Well, I'm glad you brought it up because I'm trying to figure it out. You're trying to Tariq Cohen's on the field for 13 snaps yesterday, yeah. And Dowell called him his best playmaker. Why not more passes out of a spread with like Cohen and Inman or Kendall Ryder, like others, just spread out wide and throw some easy little slants? I feel like I see other teams do it a lot more.
Yeah, there was a crossing route that Cohen almost dropped. Luckily, he caught it and ended up turning it up and got a pretty good gain. That route, they tried to hit him on that. There were a couple ghost routes where Green Bay, what we call rocking and rolling the safeties. All right, they'd hand off the inside zone to Jordan Howard, and then Cohen's in the bunch set. It wheels around like an end around, like, you know, the Hester play, kind of how the Hester. The first one, I thought if they would have handed that off, that could have been a huge play to Cohen. But normally the coaches in the booth are monitoring that, saying, hey, the rock and roll safety bit it. Let's call it again and see if he bites again, and then the next time we're going to hand it off to Cohen on that one. And then after the first one, the safeties of Green Bay said, oh, hey, this is what they were going to do. You better keep your P's and Q's, otherwise a big play is going to happen. And so their safeties started to play more discipline, but the Bears, I think, were trying to set up that play, ultimately didn't go there. But, hey, they put him back there on punt returns. You want him to get touches in the punt return game. They tried to get it to him on an inside run. And I say this, too. Normally, you're quick twitch guys. On a rain day like yesterday, it's not best for them for a change of direction. Normally, their wheels are just spinning out from underneath them. And I do think maybe somebody can ask Dowell Loggins this. Mm-hmm. He probably thought it was a mutter game, what I call a mutter game, where you want your bigger, more stable backs that have more balance on a bad weather day where footwork can be a problem.
Could have been an explanation for Cunningham over Cone there. We're talking to Jim Miller for another couple of minutes. And I know this is in the essence of what we've been talking about for the last 10 or so. I don't know if you saw this quote from Clay Matthews after the game on Mitch Trubisky and the Bears offense. Quote, his pocket presence will come along. You have to take advantage of that. That's exactly what we did. We ended up with five sacks, a number of quarterback pressures and hurries. That's what you expect to do when a team is so one-dimensional. End quote. Yep. Is there a way to coach around that if Green Bay is going for the obvious, hey, this team's one-dimensional, so therefore it's easy to defend?
Yeah, I mean, and it is. It's the growth of everything. You know, because again, five sacks, to me, there only should have been one. You know, Mitchell Trubisky is going to learn this. Same thing on a bad weather day. I would, for me personally, and I know other quarterbacks think this way, their get off on the defensive line is not there. Bad footing, all those things. So early in the game, take the check downs. Just get the ball out of your hand, log plays, those type of things. And if you go look at the first sack, first three sacks, I believe, there's a guy open underneath every time. If Mitchell just drops back, even if he has to shuffle up, I think one-on-one step, just dump it off to the back and just be like, hey, those guys now know on the defense. Now they got to track that down, and then their get off and all that becomes worse because of the rain, all that stuff starts to accumulate. And after a while, the pass rush isn't there, i.e. flip it over. Go look at the Bears' pass rush at the end of the game and why Brett Hundley had all day to throw the football. You know, there was no pass rush by the end of the game.
No, and I think all their sacks came on blitzes, by the way. Every single one of the Bears' sacks came on blitzes, so they were not generating the pressure. What do you think of Trubisky's pocket presence as we saw it yesterday, as it stands now? Is it developing, and do you have any concerns about that stuff overall?
No, I think he's getting it. I think he's going to get there. You know, because for mobile quarterbacks, a lot of times their instinct is to run. Like, if you go back and look at one of his sacks, he starts to roll to his right, feels there's pressure there, now steps up in the pocket and looks like he's ready to take off and run, and then Green Bay walls it off, and he just gets swallowed up by the rush, and there's a shallow cross route coming right across wide open from the Bears. The minute he started to escape the pocket, instead of that, just shuffle right, hit your shallow cross, you'll be just fine, my friend. That's all he had to do. But his instinct was, I'm going to take off and run. Because I've got legs, I'm athletic, and I can do that. And I've gotten out of a lot of trouble that way. Well, maybe at North Carolina you did. Not in this game, not at this level. Because there are pass rush schemes by defenses saying, hey, we know he always bails to his right. So let's force him, think he's going to bail to his right. Now they set up what's called a fish hook, forces him, oh, there's nowhere to go. And now he's not looking downfield to to get rid of the football. So those things will develop. I totally agree with Clay. And they fish baited him a couple times. That's really what it was.
Fish baited him, huh?
Yeah. Well, you know, they're baiting the fish.
Got it. They caught him. and they caught him. Thank you, Jim. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, guys.
Thank you. The segment brought to you by Amazon. Amazon is hiring in Crest Hill. This is your last chance to earn extra money this season. Go to Amazon.com/JolietJobs, equal opportunity employer. We will have James Big Cat Williams at noon, your Bears voicemails at 12:30 if you missed them. I feel like I learned a few other things or cemented a few other thoughts in the NFL yesterday outside of the Bears, but this idea of if you could have coached around what was so predictable, I think is interesting, and how much of that falls on Dowell Loggins. It's coming up on The Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It better improve. And by the way, I feel like there were some improvements on offense. That's the thing. Like, I didn't come out of that feeling quite as doom and gloom, because if it is all about Mitch Trubisky, it's like, man, there were still some nice moments for Mitch Trubisky in that game yesterday.
He's got Dontrell Inman now.
How
perfect in retrospect is the Sam Munson Pro Football Focus definition of Dontrell Inman as genuinely replacement level Madden football game wide receiver? He is 6'3". He is this tall. His arms reach that high. He is this fast. His hands are that good.
Yep.
Which means he had a drop at a terrible moment, but he was completely and utterly competent. He is capable of being the number four wide receiver possibly on the Chargers.
Yeah.
You know, and he's our number one immediately.
And against a bad pass defense, a replacement level wide receiver, especially in desperation times, can look pretty good.
Yeah.
And he looked pretty good. You know, you mentioned that drop at the end. I'd forgotten about it for a little bit. That's a fun what if. The first one, you know, they get the Kendall Wright, breaks the tackle, gets out of bounds, first down. Second one, over the middle with room to run, hits him in the hands, maybe a smidge high, but absolutely should have caught it.
Was the third one the overthrow to Bellamy?
Yes, the third one's the overthrow to Bellamy.
Which, that was a small window, but that's a throw you have to make, obviously.
And that's a throw that you hope that Mitch Trubisky makes every time in year four, but maybe in that spot, you know, like you would think that with his accuracy, he makes that throw.
Uh-huh.
But how different does it feel if first pass, first down, second pass, 20 plus yards,
yeah,
to Inman over the middle, run up, spike the ball.
Amen.
You're at midfield. You're on the other side of midfield, maybe.
After 3 hours of venting and anger and like, oh my God, are you going to lose this team? He had a chance for a minute 03.
Yeah.
A magical minute and 3 seconds. I had a moment where I'm like, really? No.
Would have been sweet.
Yeah.
I do wonder how different it would have looked if, because they probably don't run that play to Bellamy if Inman catches the one on the second play.
You know, whatever. It's funny because Miller said, like, Bellamy, I know he's got trouble catching balls, but,
but he's a receiver.
I mean, that's my thing with him. Like, I understand he did catch, and you and I were talking about it just before the top of the hour, about Bellamy. He had a great route and caught the ball and had the touchdown. And, you know, it's not like there's anybody that's that much better where we think, but we know he's bad at catching footballs. I just don't get all the snaps on offense.
And I get it. I think that makes a ton of sense. I just think that they clearly reshuffled the entire depth chart during the bye week. And I wonder if they're like, God, we wanted to push and spread. Remember, that was the thing they said, like,
yeah,
we're going to have guys that can run
so
deep
speed,
and actually open stuff up.
Bellamy speed. And they did get a touchdown out of it.
They got a touchdown out of it. And what if Marcus Wheaton sucks?
Apparently, he must suck.
like, that is entirely possible that Marcus Wheaton is just really bad.
I'll tell you what. Anybody who goes through the Steelers and catches, you know, a couple of touchdowns from Big Ben, I'm like, oh, they could play somewhere else.
Right.
Right? Where's Sammy Coates now? He's playing somewhere.
Right? Is he? I guess so.
He is.
Yeah,
I think
he
caught a pass yesterday.
He's in Cleveland.
Is that where he is?
Oh, well, so he's barely in the NFL. He's getting a check.
Does that count in the NFL? There's one other guy I want to talk about with snap counts.
Okay.
And on the passing depth chart, and that's Adam Shaheen. Because...
your guy.
It's my guy.
It's your guy.
It's my guy in terms of...
You're shorting him. You're like shorting his stock.
But then there's a moment where like... there it is! I saw it!
Right.
That looked like baby Gronk! I get it! Give it to him again. Give it to him again.
No. Now you're being greedy.
Yeah.
Two targets. That's what we can do.
But didn't he have the one on the bootleg? We're like, oh my God, yeah. What is that thing? That's a giant tight end man slab running, doing things. More of him.
A man slab?
Yeah.
It was a giant tight end man slab. They should put that on the back of the jersey.
Yeah, right. It should go with that.
Man slab. Let's get an update.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
It was a huge breakthrough moment. Really was. He tripled his output for the season. Went in with one catch, left the game with three.
It's amazing. Great job. Big day for Adam Shaheen. Yeah, he was.
What does passionate running look like?
That.
Okay,
apparently,
got it.
To Chris Spielman. The second round tight end was on the field for 31 snaps. It's 52% of the offensive snaps. Daniel Brown, 38. So he was outsnapped by Daniel Brown, which I think we thought was coming. But remember we talked about the percentage of snaps that are passing plays?
Yeah, that was one of the SpiegelandParkinsBets.com over-unders.
It was.
Yeah.
Because on the year, the Bears had run 257 passing plays, and Adam Shaheen had been on the field for 11 of them. That was going into the game.
Your over-unders involve like a Parkins-level deep dive to find them out. And by the way, have you listened to every seventh inning stretch yet?
No, Ray's on it. Okay. Diaz, yeah, he's got the supercut.
Yeah,
it's
okay.
All ready to go.
Got it. Sorry. Continue.
He was busy buying vodka for Russ Patera.
Yeah, good job by you, by the way. He loved the bottle.
Yeah. So of the snaps, he was out there for 13 passing snaps. That's over. That's over. But Daniel Brown was out there for 38 snaps. 32 of those were passes. So,
Shaheen has been out there for more passing, but not as much as Daniel Brown. Is that what you're saying?
Of this past week,
okay.
Daniel Brown was out there, like every time he was out there, you knew it was a pass. Talk about predictability.
Right.
Right. And this was my issue with Shaheen. Every time he was out there the first eight games, it was going to be a run play. It was going to be like 90% of the time he was out there, they ran. That's kind of an indicator for a smart defensive coordinator, right?
I'm no statistician, but that seems fairly obvious.
So, but anyway, should we be encouraged by what we saw from Adam Shaheen yesterday? Progress for a second round tight end. He's out there just a little bit more here in week 10.
It's such a low bar, and it took a catastrophic injury for him to get two catches, one of which went for 1 yard. So probably not.
Two injuries, right? If Deion Sims is healthy,
true.
we haven't seen that much of it.
Yeah, that's true. This is not an excuse. And I think when you use that as a qualifier, it inevitably sounds like an excuse. But as just like an exercise that we can all maybe think about during the commercial break. How many people involved in the Bears offense, coaching, quality control, on the field, whatever, would you describe as good at their job?
Boy, Hronis Grassou not on the list is the first thought.
Right.
And
mine. Well, because Whitehair's regressed. Leno is league average, I guess, that's probably not good.
No, you know, I think he is. I think you probably got to give him a little.
You're giving Charles Leno good at his job?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Not great.
No, not great. I'm not asking for great. I'm just asking merely above average.
Can I still give Whitehair good? I still want to give him good, but
it's been a bad year.
Is Josh Sitton good at his job?
Yeah, Josh Sitton's good at his job. Okay. Like, how many guys that if they were just all of a sudden available would be an upgrade over more than half the teams in the NFL? It is an unbelievably small number of people when you include your play caller, your quarterback, your lineman, your running backs, your receivers, your quarterback coach, your wide receiver coach. Like, I'm talking like the entire offensive side of the brain trust. It's less than five people. Kind of goes a long way in explaining why the Bears offense sucks, right? And it's hard for them to be like, oh, well, wow, if Dow Loggins would have thrown more on first down, everything would be fine.
Well, but you have to adjust to whatever the hell you have.
For
that's,
sure.
That's the thing that Fox is, you know, that Fox drives me crazy with, and Loggins was driving me crazy with. Adjust to whatever you have, at least.
Oh, and it doesn't make it not worthy of criticism or frustration or anything like that. But this idea that all of a sudden, we had a better play caller in here. This is just a top 10 offense waiting to be unleashed.
Well,
they have no talent.
How do we feel about is Adam Shaheen a good blocking tight end? Because that appears to be what they drafted in the second round.
Right, which is not what you want to draft with the 46th overall pick or whatever it was. Yeah, not good.
No, that's not a big number what you're asking about.
Right.
I like Jordan Howard.
Right, no, he was the first one I came up with. Jordan Howard is clearly one.
Tariq Cohen would get snapped up and somebody would give him a chance to be their third running back.
Yeah, but
not a second running back.
Tariq Cohen is not good. Like he's not an above average football player.
He's their best playmaker. Remember that.
Right.
Dowell Loggins called him their best playmaker and then used him 13 times yesterday.
Like just if the litmus test is above average at their position or their job, I think the number is definitively one with Jordan Howard with the possibility of three or four if you want to be fairly generous to the offensive lineman.
Yeah, that's brutal.
It's really, really depressing.
This is why sometimes like when we go over some basics or offer some information that may already be out there and some of our diehards might know some of the stuff. Some people don't. Like, I love this texture. Who the F is Daniel Brown? Wow.
Yeah. I went to Hebrew school with him. Nice kid.
Sir, I feel you. I feel you. This is where you are. At one point, he was like the sixth string tight end, and then he's jumped up to the fourth string tight end, and he's getting more snaps than the second round pick. So
the best thing is we had this exact same Daniel Brown conversation last year.
Yes, we did. The exact same one. Like, wow, Daniel Brown is a person.
And that exact same text probably came from the exact same guy.
Who is your daddy, and what does he do?
We shouldn't be able to do that with players, though.
Probably not.
That bit shouldn't work with players.
But it's the Bears, and this is Spiegel and Parkins on the Score.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
I love when they don't have a number for the penalty because everybody committed the penalty. You know, we shouldn't have circled back around to this. I know it's Jim Miller is a fairly polarizing regular contributor on the text line if we're pulling back the curtain a little bit. A
lot of people going to one of those polls.
Yeah. Jay, can we look up where NFL teams rank, maybe give me the last few years, too, if it's not today, it's not today. I have no idea how easy or hard this will be to find in terms of most penalized and least penalized teams. Because I guess I have always kind of assumed that the most penalized teams are also the poorly coached teams.
Yeah, we've equated that with a lack of discipline.
Right, lack of discipline, lack of preparation out of the bye. And he's like, no. No one accepts it during practice, and it's about players executing.
About player responsibility.
And I wonder if it's something that you could attribute to a rookie quarterback.
I don't know. I mean, like, Trubisky himself was asked about the delay of game, I think, on the extra point, and talked about the focus. Right? Was that what he was responding to?
Right.
So I guess we weren't particularly focused. It's like there's a collective focus thing, a collective on-pointness that's supposed to be there. And hell yeah, I put that on coaches.
Me too. But I wonder, like, are the Patriots always the least penalized team in the NFL?
That's a good question. I don't know.
I don't either.
Well, looking at this year, the Bears and Patriots are right in the middle of the pack. New England has had 60 penalties. The Bears and New England both 60 penalties called against. Seattle's at the top with 94.
That's the most penalties of Seattle?
Yep.
That's one of the three coaches that Lombardi said is a true difference maker in terms of positive way in Pete Carroll.
And he wants them to be on the edge. The edge of anger and aggression.
Right. They have 112 total flags, and then 94 it says against count. So I don't know how it's sorted, but they're at the top of the league, however you want to look at it.
All right, so he's not wrong. So who else is at the bottom or at the top? Sorry,
Seattle, the Jets, the Niners, the Chiefs, and the Browns.
Jets and Niners haven't had their bye yet, though, so that's also have.
So that's a quantity thing. It's not on a per game basis.
Correct.
But so it's interesting, though. So it's three awful teams, two of them albeit without having a bye, but two of the three coaches that we would say are among the top three coaches in the NFL, in Pete Carroll and Andy Reid.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty interesting. Patriots in the middle. Give me the three or four teams at the bottom in terms of least penalized.
All right, hang on. I'm on the per game page. Seattle's still at the top of that.
Okay, that's good that you're on that. That's a good
least
page.
Penalized now, Carolina, Washington, Minnesota, Tennessee, and the Giants.
Man, the Giants is kind of an outlier.
Well, the Giants aren't close enough to anybody to be able to commit a penalty.
Yeah,
the refs just want to go home. It's like, all right.
As do the Giants.
Let that one go.
But those bottom four are all at least competent, if not, right? Tennessee is 6-3, aren't they?
Yeah, well, and a wide range of quarterbacks, right? Like, Minnesota well-coached team, but they've played, what, two different quarterbacks this year, going to spiraling towards a third.
Uh-huh.
Carolina, no one attributes Cam Newton with, like, attention to detail and discipline and all of that.
Well, let's all follow Cam Newton.
Right, but among the least penalized teams,
yeah.
The Giants are about to fire their coach, least penalized. It's pretty interesting.
Where are the Saints? Where are the Saints on that? And by the Saints, I mean the best team in the NFL. Where are the Saints?
They are seventh least penalized.
Okay. I'm ready to call the Saints the best team in the NFL. Are you? They had six rushing touchdowns yesterday. That's as many or more than 17 NFL teams have all year. They had six yesterday. Some of their numbers, when Buffalo knew they were going to run, it just did not freaking matter. And this is a team with Drew Brees.
Well, that's the thing. It's the simplest way of saying it. It's like, imagine what Drew Brees would be like if he had a running game that could protect all those leads all those years. Oh, well, now you're seeing
it. Now we're seeing it.
Because he hasn't been a great fantasy QB. Drew Brees is like a borderline top 10, outside the top 10 fantasy quarterback because he's relying so much on Kamara and Mark Ingram.
Can I give you two ridiculous numbers about the Saints running game from yesterday?
Please.
Going into the game, they were averaging 4.1 yards per carry between the tackles, when they would run between the tackles, right?
Yeah.
Yesterday, overall, they averaged 4.1 yards per carry before contact of any kind. They were running 4 yards before they were touched.
That's ridiculous.
When you put eight in the box against them, as Buffalo did a ton yesterday, eight or even nine in the box yesterday, they ran the ball nine times for 128 yards for seven first downs and three touchdowns. Against eight in the box, they averaged 14.2 yards per carry against eight in the box. Yesterday.
Damn.
Load up on them and then watch. It doesn't matter because they would load up on the box. Then they'd pitch it to Kamara out on the wide side and he's fast and shifty enough. Oh, well,
he's really good.
Look at him. I got nine. Or I put eight in the box and fake the pitch and then Ingram goes right up the middle. I mean, whatever. It's ridiculous what they're doing right now. And that's a team with Drew Brees.
So you've got them as best. I mean, the Eagles were idle, obviously.
Yeah. I've got that offense as not stoppable right now. And I've got that defense as plenty good enough when your offense is not stoppable.
The only thing is looking at their schedule. Their two losses to start the year at Minnesota, home for New England. Then which of these wins is impressive after this? Now, mind you, only two of them were by single digits. They've been blowing out the people they're playing. At Carolina, at Miami, home for Detroit, at Green Bay, home for the Bears, home for Tampa, at Buffalo.
Right, yeah. They're not beating up on great teams.
Yeah.
Although the NFC is also full of not great teams.
Right.
In fairness, so it's a question. You do have to do a little bit of an eye test if you're willing to say that anybody in the NFC is great, because like we do this every year in the NFL.
Right.
Like, hey, there's only one or two great teams. So is the third or fourth best team good? What's their best win? Well, there's not that many opportunities for good wins. Mm-hmm. Like not everybody can win in Foxborough.
Right.
You know what about Minnesota? Because I come away from Minnesota thinking
that's amazing.
A team that is legit and their defense is good and their receiving core is good.
Still Latavius Murray and Jerick McKinnon, and they're getting it done, but their defense is better than the Saints' defense.
Their defense is really good. And then they've got arguably the best wide receiver combo in the NFL, and they're coached very well Mike Zimmer.
Adam Thielen has transitioned from underrated to just freaking really good.
Yeah.
You know?
And Stephon Diggs is there. Yep. And they've done it with, I mean, Case Keenum looked amazing yesterday. And what do they do? Like, to me, they got to be one of our teams for the three technique tomorrow. We got to talk to someone in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Because Teddy Bridgewater comes back in that moment of him like crying on the bench.
I just got chills, dude. Like, there were some real moments yesterday in the NFL. Teddy Bridgewater, just the fact that he got back and came back at all, he's like, oh my God, I'm active. Here I am. I'm active from that injury. The Marquise Goodwin moment. After he had, an 80-yard touchdown, and none of us knew, but his teammates knew, his newborn had died less than 24 hours before.
Right, premature birth, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And he drops to his knees, and he prays for a moment and crosses himself, and all his teammates come around, and they're hugging him. Once you see that and you know what the story is, oh, my God.
I know. I didn't see that until much later, obviously, just being in transit and at the Bears game yesterday. And I read that at, 10 o'clock last night, and I was like, wait, what happened?
Yeah.
That is, could you imagine? How do you play?
I don't know.
The picture on Instagram of the kid's finger being just the size of the tip of his finger.
Oh my God.
His hand.
I didn't see that. Oh my God.
Yeah.
So he was born and lived for a little while, Campy?
Yeah, he was born, lived for a little while, or was delivered prematurely, I believe lived for a little while, then died of complications. And so, yeah, he did have a chance to interact with his deceased son.
So, I mean, you've got the Saints, who I love, the Vikings, who you love. At some
they just
point,
look legit to me. Like the Vikings just look like they'll be a tough out. Like they're just a solid team.
How do we not look at the Rams that way? Just because we're still not sure what Jared Goff is? It's 300 yards, 3 touchdowns, no picks again.
Yeah.
Second week in a row.
Eagles are still there, obviously.
With Gurley and that offensive line and the defensive playmakers.
And Robert Woods now, all he does is score touchdowns.
How about it?
I don't really understand how. But Robert Woods all of a sudden is just like steaming.
Remember we said the NFC was like a steaming pile of crap, like what, a month ago? Right? And we're like, who's the second best team? Now there's like,
I still think it's wide open though.
Yeah, like, I think there's a lot of crap in the bottom two thirds.
Yeah, and I don't know that the NFC is good. I think there's a lot of teams that are interesting, and let's put it like, I'd be floored if the one seed won the whole thing. Like, you know what I mean? It just feels like someone's getting upset. The 4 seed will win, or the 5 seed. Like some team will just get hot and play really well at the right time and steamroll that thing. But so you're on the Saints as the best team in the NFL.
I just in an offensive league, man, that's a team that can do whatever the hell it wants to on offense.
Well, 3 weeks ago, I asked you, or 2 weeks ago, this was on Halloween, I asked you for 5 teams, if we could pick 5 teams and one of them would win the Super Bowl.
Did I give you the Saints?
No, we said New England, the Chiefs, the Steelers, Philly, and Seattle were the 5 teams we picked.
Yeah, I gave you Seattle. It's my second team in the NFC.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've become convinced on the Chiefs. I tend to be prisoner of a moment sometimes.
God, well, no, hey.
Do you know me? Anybody here know me?
I'm getting to know you.
Getting to know you.
Dexter wrote in, when is Marquise Goodwin picking games? That's just too soon. Brought to you by Office Depot Max. You've had a big year, so treat yourself to great deals on tech and furniture at Office Depot Office Max. You deserve it. Office Depot Office Max, taking care of business. Spiegel's in the corner. We'll talk to Big Cat Williams and Spiegel and Parkins on the Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.